Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. My guest, Bill Ripken, has been around baseball forever. A 12-year major leaguer, current analyst for MLB Network, and a member of one of the sport's leading families, Ripken is the author of a new book, State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball. He also happens to be on the most famous Fleer baseball card of all time. Bill Ripken, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, what's going on today?
Everything's going well, and I'm getting excited for the baseball season. I'm sure you are as well. Why did you want to write this book?
Well, I think over the past few years, there's been an awful lot of chatter and conversation surrounding the new school, and I wanted to kind of make a point that the old school guy has always used numbers. The old school guy has always used information to come up with a plan. The old school guy has always analyzed what went on a baseball field. And if I didn't keep saying old school guy in there, one might think I was talking about the new school. But us old school crusty guys always use numbers, information, and analyze things along the way to come up with a plan to play. And I think people are just trying to ignore the fact that the old school guy uses numbers and information.
There's been a learning curve for a lot of people, and especially in front offices, but also among fans. How did the old school guys, as you say, use statistics before we got into this era of sabermetrics?
Well, I think we always used numbers. We always used information. Now, there's more information, more numbers at our fingertips today. But I have this sense that some of the hardcore new schoolers want to shoehorn numbers into necessarily where they don't need to be, or they're just kind of defining or naming something that's already happened in the past. So information is the king, always will be, but being able to institute it into actual baseball, you know, purpose and common sense is the next big test.
One stat that you specifically cite along those lines is launch angle. Can you explain why you have some questions about that?
Well, launch angle is nothing more than the ball coming off the bat. It's a measurement of the angle the ball comes off the bat. Everybody who's ever played baseball has had a launch angle. Babe Ruth had a launch angle. The idea of now the fact that we can measure something and we name something and we must use it over and over again is a little bit of overkill. And the idea of somebody thinking you can improve your launch angle, when I state in the book on a chapter, Christian Yelich won the MVP in the National League in 2018 with an average launch angle of 4.7, hit 36 homers. Mookie Betts won the American League MVP in 2018 with an average year-long launch angle of 18.4 and hit 32 homers. So the guy with the lower launch angle actually hit four more homers than the guy with the higher launch angle. That just tells me that the two guys' swings are a little bit different, and Christian Yelich picked his spot and caught a few more balls out front of home plate, hit the ball out of the ballpark. So if somebody says he needs to improve his launch angle, are they referring to the launch angle going up, or are they referring to the launch angle go down? Because I can show you examples with guys who have high launch angles that don't necessarily do so much, and guys with low launch angles that necessarily do a whole lot.
What about the player who's not in that elite class, though, who's now trying to lift balls out of the ballpark instead of taking a line drive single? You know, home runs are up across the sport, and people who are up for contracts and so on want to have that, you know, 20 or 30 home run mark.
Well, I think that's where it lies a big problem, and it also is going to lie a big problem down towards youth baseball. So the reason why I describe launch angle as being exit angle, because it's nothing more than the ball coming off the bat, if people misinterpret this as uppercut, that's wrong. And if a 10-year-old coach is going to tell a 10-year-old kid to swing up because you must hit the ball in the air, the 10-year-old kid's going to find himself in a situation where he doesn't have success, and then that same 10-year-old kid's going to find himself with a soccer ball on a different type field. So we need to be careful with some of these terminologies that we use and how we use them, because we're sending, I think, a little bit of a misleading message down to our youth baseball coaches as well.
Are there any new era stats that you think have told us something new about the way rosters are constructed, value of players, that kind of thing? Is there anything from the sabermetrics field that you like?
Well, look, I think, the term sabermetric or the term analytic has now been described and is now the name for any bit of information that comes in. I don't necessarily look at some of these new statistics of XFIP or DRS in any way that is extremely positive. What I do look at with the new school that is involved in the game is their ability to dig and dig and dig for more information, because as I said, information is king. But just trying to put something in place when you can go through real numbers and look at things and you can apply some common sense to them and go, that doesn't necessarily make sense. I'm not going to be forced into using something that I state in the book that's either weighted, created, or adjusted, because all three of those words mean they're not an actual number. Something's been done to those numbers to make them look like that. So I would rather stick with the real. I'd rather stick with information if you want to give it to me. All new information is good information if it can be used in baseball. But if it can't be used in baseball, I don't want to be looked at as a rigid, old-school guy that's unwilling to conform. I want to be looked at as a guy that has baseball experience, that's willing to take information, but the information has to fit the baseball need.
Your book begins with you discussing your dad, Cal Ripken Sr. Of course, he was in the Orioles system forever and the manager. At the risk of, making this about me, when I was a little kid, I wrote a lot of letters to people in baseball asking for autographs, and he was one of the few who wrote back. I never forgot that. So anyway, it was great reading about your dad and your thoughts on his path in baseball. What was his approach to statistics? Because he did come up in a much earlier era in baseball.
He came up in a much earlier era, but still used numbers that were at his fingertips. So if we were facing the New York Yankees, and we saw Don Mattingly was hot by looking at the old-fashioned box scores, and you saw that Dave Winfield was not, you're not pitching to Don Mattingly when you have Dave Winfield hitting behind. So, you know, that's the very essence of having numbers and having favorable matchups. That type of stuff was done always by the old-school guy. Now, the fact that we have more information, get it. But the genesis, the gist of the information hasn't changed a whole lot. The how we get it and how much of it we get has certainly changed. But Dad was always in favor of using numbers. The problem was he just only had so many numbers at his fingertips.
We're speaking with Bill Ripken. He's the author of State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball. You yourself, and I remember watching you as a kid, you were kind of known for being a shorthanded infielder. You didn't strike out a lot, didn't hit a ton of home runs. And I'm wondering if a player like you could make it in today's big leagues with the emphasis on, your middle infielders hitting so many home runs nowadays.
Maybe not. And that seems to be a bit of a problem, because as the norm goes in the big leagues, I ended up squeaking out 10 and a half years of service time, parts of 12 seasons in the big leagues. So I would hate to think you're willing to just get rid of that. My one thing that I felt I could do very well was catch the ball and throw it where I was supposed to. And back then, I had the luxury of going into spring trainings and trying to make teams, and I usually ran into managers that I was there that valued being able to turn a double play in the ninth inning to win the game, to help a team win the game. So I would hope that we don't just go so spreadsheet crazy over these next few years in baseball, and we allow some of the baseball scouts that use the terminology, yeah, he doesn't do this very well, he doesn't do that very well, but man, that kid can play. I got a spot for him on my team, so I don't think we can ever lose sight of the he-can-just-play guy, and even though some of the individual metrics don't jump off at the board at you.
Do you think that the new rules on how relievers are going to be used will help that end of it? Maybe you could take an extra, infielder type or a fourth outfielder if you don't have to carry so many pitchers, because you won't be able to change pitchers as much now.
Well, it's interesting, because we've put the three-batter minimum on pitchers coming in, and that's only in the middle of the inning. So if a guy comes in with two outs in the sixth inning, he gets the last out of the inning, he can be taken out of the game, and that's okay. That's one rule. The extra man on the roster, if we're sitting here looking at, in my opinion, the dynamics of the way you must face three hitters, or we can carry this type of player on my bench, I don't think those teams are going to be the successful ones at the end of the year and go to the postseason. I think the teams that go to spring training construct their roster the best way they can. They understand that that 26th guy anyway is probably not going to play as vital of a role as everybody else. So let's go ahead and line up our donkeys, put the saddle on them, and ride them through the 162. So looking at the three-hitter rule and necessarily the last man on the roster, I'm not so sure that's how we're going to build a championship club by the end of the year.
Okay, let me ask you the C word. This offseason has been dominated by coverage of the Astros cheating scandal. The players on other teams have been unusually outspoken about it. There's been a lot of criticism about how Commissioner Manfred has handled everything. Where do things stand in your mind as we go into another season?
Well, they certainly went above and beyond the norm of trying to, shall we say, compete team against team. And back in the day, I use the terminology that we used to look across the field, or we used to watch the pitcher, and we're trying to come up with a poker player's tell. We want to know when he's bluffing, when he's got a good hand. So we're looking for that. We certainly never put a mirror behind the poker player in the corner of the saloon to see what his actual cards look like. So that's one thing. The second thing on this is the nature of this. We're going to get through it. Baseball will get through it. And who knows, in some strange way, once this investigation now with the Red Sox is hopefully coming to an end, baseball is going to ultimately end up better for this because I think the commissioner's office and Major League Baseball are going to find a way to put rules out there where people are going to be very clear. And I think he's going to lay punishments out in this rule that's going to be very clear on what happens moving forward. This might reach the players. So some of the players' comments towards other players is a little bit different from what I'm used to. I was a player that went through some labor unrest. I think some of these players have enjoyed labor peace for a long time and don't necessarily know maybe what they're getting into when they start going after some of their players, because they're all part of the union together. So this is going to be something that I'd rather them see them just kind of get ready for spring training, let the commissioners off handle these penalties, and let's move forward.
Do you have any truck for the idea that the Astros' 2017 title should be taken away?
I'm not a big fan of saying we need to take it away. I think then we open up that Pandora's box where we start going through the record books and we start doing things like that. It's fair to say the 2017 championship of the Houston Astros is very questionable right now. I don't think it's going to be less questionable if they take the trophy away. I don't see anything like that. In fact, I'm pretty sure we're going to be talking about this 10 years, 15 years, 20 years from now. The 2017 Astros team has a tainted mark to it when it comes to world champion. And let's be fair, the individual players that participated on those teams took a little bit of a hit to their reputation as well. So I believe punishment has been handed down because it's in the eye of the people. And I believe the people all believe there's some question marks surrounding the individual players along with that championship.
You write about the designated hitter in your book. Do you think it's a good idea to expand it to both leagues?
I think it needs to happen. I don't think it's just a good idea. The National League in baseball is the only league in all of baseball that basically plays with the pitcher hitting. And I say that because if you go to the Japanese Professional Baseball League, you'll see a DH. You go to the Korean Baseball League, you'll see a DH. You go to AAA, and two National League clubs playing each other in AAA have the option to use the DH. AA uses the DH, A-ball uses the DH, rookie ball uses the DH. College uses the DH, high school uses the DH. So the National League really is the only last part of a league, because it's part of Major League Baseball, but it's just the National League, is the last league that's going to adopt this, and I believe that should happen sometime soon.
What about this proposal to expand the playoff field and have a couple more wild cards and teams picking their opponents?
You know, I'm all for the idea, once again, because this is like, it's almost information, but it's just ideas. Let's throw something out there and let's talk about it and see what we come up with. Now, I'm not a big fan of the idea of seven teams in each league, which equates to 14 out of 30, which is almost half. I think if we came up with a system where maybe we go to six teams, where there's one of those made-for-TV events where the first and second team get byes, the third team gets to pick who they want to play. That would be a little exciting, but I'd also like to see this thing happen the same time we maybe expand to have 32 teams in baseball. That way 12 teams make the playoffs and 20 don't. I don't think we need to look like basketball or hockey with about half the league getting into postseason.
Are there any other changes you favor, big ones to the sport?
I don't know about I favor any sort of changes that are out there. I'm one that am of the old school, certainly, and I also believe there's not quite as much wrong with baseball overall as other people seem to think. I like the idea of us tinkering. I like the idea of trying to create innovative ways to maybe grow a fan base. Those are all I'm on board with. But the overall game, I think it's been played pretty similarly over the few years. We've tweaked things for players' safety. We've tweaked things to keep those guys on the field that we want to go watch. And that's a good thing. But overall, I kind of like the way the game's set up.
We obviously expect, you know, the Astros, Yankees, the Dodgers to be good in 2020. Are there any other teams you have your eye on that might be a surprise contender?
Well, I think my eye's on the same teams that you like. And I think no matter what's happened with Houston, they have a talented group down there. Now they got to go out and prove it. Yankees are good. Dodgers are good. I think they're odds-on favorite. I think necessarily not so much looking at a specific team, but maybe trying to find a team that could have a very good pitching staff. So very similar to what the Nationals did last year by winning a wild card game and then going out there and dismissing the Dodgers. All those teams we just talked about, Houston, the Yankees, and the Dodgers, can all be dismissed out of the playoffs by a team that's got some pretty good, solid starting pitchers that are going to go out there and dominate. So the Nationals still have to be looked at. I think Atlanta's going to merge a little bit more this year, and I'm going to stay in the NL East and think the New York Mets, if things line up and the planets were align a little bit, Syndergaard figures some stuff out, they might have some boys on the bump that actually could do that too. So it's a long season of 162, and then once we get into the postseason, let's start to line up the starting pitchers against the other starting pitchers. You might be able to pick the winner that way.
Baseball Prospectus agrees with you about the Mets. Okay, last thing. You mentioned the labor unrest that you experienced as a player during your career. In 94, when the strike took hold in August, what did you do with your time once you didn't have games to play?
Well, that was easy because my first child was born on August 10th. So labor unrest was, I believe, August 12th. So I went home and I was a dad to a newborn, and I didn't have to go back to Arlington, Texas and miss what was going on at home. So in one regard, I think I was very lucky. In the second regard, the 95 season didn't start on time and was a strike-shortened season because of the unrest in 94. And I was not afforded the opportunity to go into a spring training camp and make a club. But as far as being a new dad for the first time, I don't think I could have asked for a better timing, at least to get acquainted with my daughter.
Well, and it needs to be said, this was before baseball had the leave that it currently has. So you had a choice to make, obviously, if the games were still going.
Yeah, I got to stay home, and there was no choice needed.
Bill Ripken is the author of State of Play, The Old School Guide to New School Baseball. Bill, thank you so much for taking this time, and enjoy the season.
All right, dude, I appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.